Morning. This is Wausau West Warrior High School Baseball on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app.
For more than 60 years, Sun Printing has been Central Wisconsin's commercial printer of choice due to their commitment to quality, creative solutions, and dedicated service. Sun Printing's team offers you a wide spectrum of services, whether you need vehicle graphics, offset, digital, large format, graphic design, or mailing. They print everything under the sun. No project is too big or too small. So give Sun Printing a call at 845-4911 or visit them online at sunprinting.com.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau, streaming at bullfallsradio.com.
Top of the sixth inning, and a new pitcher here for the Warriors. And the first pitch from Carson Thurs is in for strike one called. So a solid five-inning effort today for Keegan Cruzan. He deserved better in terms of where he stands in terms of the win-loss. But 0-1 pitch, misses low and inside. His leading things off here for the Huskies in the top of the sixth is Zach Shipman, their shortstop and number two hitter. Here's the pitch. That's in there for a called strike two. So Carson Thurs, freshman, getting an opportunity here on the varsity field. 1-2. That's off the artificial turf. Goes to the backstop, and it evens things up at 2-2. No complaints about the pitching here today for either side, really. I mean, it's really been a solid performance for both teams and everybody that's been on the hill. Swing and a miss, and there's strike three. So Carson Thurs comes out there and strikes out the first batter he faces.
Next up, number two, Jack Gorman.
Jack Gorman, the left fielder and number three hitter, will next step in. Gorman has the two RBIs in this game, a two RBI double in the third. Excuse me, the first pitch, missed for a ball. Check swing, held up, pitch just up and out of the zone. Count goes to 2-0. Just three hits for each side in this game. All three of the hits for North came in that two-run third inning. Pitch is a little bit up for ball three. And in fact, again, one of the hits, the double that Jack Gorman had, it appeared to be a ball that kind of got lost up in the air by the center fielder. And coming over with Sillers, could not get there as well. Pitch is on the outer portion for a call strike one. So again, and then the previous hit was a ball that was right down the left field line. A diving attempt made by Ryder Schindler. Got a glove on it, couldn't bring it in. So again, boy, Cruzan pitched really, really well. There's a strike, and it's now full. Three balls and two strikes. So battling back to run it full is Carson Thurs. Three balls and two strikes. The freshman looks in to his catcher, Rowan Robbins. Has the sign and the target. Here's the payoff pitch. There's a ground ball. One hopper right to the shortstop, Tony Ifaldano. He'll flip across in time. 6-3 on the putout for out number two. Man, this twin bill is just flying right on by. I mean, the pitchers have been so good. They're working quickly, throwing a lot of strikes as well. Aiden Pankratz, center fielder, up next for Eau Claire North. Out of the stretch, even with nobody on base, is Thurs. Here's the pitch. Pours it right in there for strike one called. Well, this freshman has come out and looked pretty darn good. First time I've had a chance to see him on the mound. And the pitch just misses a tad up. Count evens up at 1-1. North looking to salvage a split in this twin bill. Warriors won the first game 4-0. Here's the pitch. There's a flare to right field. That's going to be in there for a base hit. Not a hard hit ball, but in the right spot for Aiden Pankratz. Goes the other way for a two-out single.
Now batting, the pitcher, Paxton Bush.
Wausau West pitchers had retired 9 straight Eau Claire North batters until that hit. And now Paxton Bush, left-handed hitting pitcher, will step in. Pitch goes off. Oh, it goes off the foot of the hitter. Hit by pitch. And now first and second and two outs for North.
Up next, third baseman, number 13, Cooper Krushke.
Cooper Krushke, the third baseman and number 6 hitter, up next for the Huskies. Levante Bean comes out to do the running for the pitcher Bush. Want to rest him up. He has some work to do still on the mound. So Bean will go out to run at first. Quick meeting on the hill. That will be over very quickly. And now Krushke will step in. Top of the sixth, 2-0 lead for Eau Claire North. Runners on first and second, two outs. Carson Thurs towing the rubber. The right-hander peeks back at the runner. Kicks and fires. Roller, third base side. Nice big hop taken by Joe Gravine. He'll throw across and able to dig it out is Ty Teske. And that will do it for the Huskies in the sixth. No runs on one base hit. There were no errors and two runners left on base. Warrior offense has some work to do. Heading to the bottom of the sixth. It is Eau Claire North 2, Wausau West nothing. This is Warrior Baseball on 98.9 WXCO. Online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO. And on the Civic Media app.
Hungry for flavor-packed fun?
Dive into Red Robin's sizzling burgers, mouth-watering fries, and endless options.
Or maybe you're craving the perfect slice.
Then it's Donato's Pizza, your passport to pizza perfection.
Order now and treat yourself to an unforgettable taste experience.
Red Robin and Donato's Pizza, 2255 48 Rib Mountain Drive in Wausau.
Call 715-301-0019 or log on redrobin.com.
Red Robin and Donato's Pizza.
Yum.
Well, the Warriors have the top of the order up here in the bottom of the sixth. Tony Ifaldano will lead things off, and the first pitch from Bush is outside for ball one. Tony Ifaldano, Ryder Schindler, and Joe Gravine do up here against Paxton Bush. Here's the pitch. That will bounce in there, and that's ball two. Well, obviously, first thing, you like to get some base runners. Get that first base runner on base. Get that potential tying run to the plate. Out of the windup, here's Bush's pitch. Just off the outside corner, and that's ball three. 3-0 on Tony Ifaldano. He flew out to right in the first, hit that ball really well, and then grounded to short in the third. Oh, just catches the top of the zone on the outside corner for strike one called. So Bush has gone the distance, 5 shutout innings, comes back 3-1. There's a looper towards right center field. It's going to drop in there for a base hit. Tony Ifaldano goes the other way for a leadoff single in the sixth.
Now batting left fielder number two, Ryder Schindler.
And now the potential tying run does come to the plate for Wausau West as Ryder Schindler will come to the plate. Schindler walked in the first and struck out in the fourth. That is the fourth base hit for West. Four hits for the Warriors, four hits for the Huskies. First pitch is in there for strike one called. The wind is pushing out towards right field right now. So again, some fly balls will get a little extra push. And the pitch misses up and out of the strike zone. Evens it up at 1-1. 2-0, bottom of the sixth inning. Eau Claire North with the lead. Game number two of a doubleheader. And the pitch. Catches the top of the zone for strike two called. Joe Gravine on deck for West. He's been swinging a good bat here today. So Schindler settles back in. And the pitch. Misses up high, and it's now 2-2. See if the Warriors have a late rally in them. Again, the runner leads off first. And the pitch. Misses away, and the count runs full. Three balls and two strikes. Big pitch right now. Again off first, Ifaldano. Bush, payoff pitch. Misses up and away, and that's ball four. The tying run now on base for Wausau West. And maybe that might be it for Paxton Bush. We'll wait and see. Going to have a meeting on the mound. And, yep, we're going to get a new pitcher here for the Huskies. So West trying to come from behind, trailing 2-0, but runners on first and second. Nobody out in the bottom of the sixth inning. We'll come back, tell you about the new pitcher coming up next. This is Wausau West Warrior High School Baseball on 98.9 WXCO.
Looking for the best in website design and digital marketing? Look no further than Coast to Coast Marketing, Central Wisconsin's number one choice. We're not just about building great websites, we're about building our community too. That's why for every website you purchase, we'll donate 10% of the sale to the school of your choice. Imagine growing your business while giving back to local schools. It's a win-win. Visit c2cmarketing.com or call 715-379-7460 today and make a difference with your business and your community.
Ben Mettler is the new pitcher for the Huskies. Comes in with runners on first and second, nobody out, and Joe Gravine coming to the plate. Mettler working out of the stretch, peeks back at the runner at second, kicks and fires. Gravine trying to bunt it, but pushes it foul first base side. Gravine is 0 for 2 here in game number 2. He was 2 for 3 with a pair of doubles in the first game. Ben Mettler peeks at the runner at second, kicks and deals. Another square around, bunt is laid down. It will be a fair ball, throw to third in time. It just barely got beyond the batter's box on the right-hand side. And McCabe Thiessen-Ritter was able to grab it, fire to third, get the lead runner, So it's a fielder's choice.
Up next,
one out.
Number 23, Carson Thurs.
2-5 on the putout. And now runners on first and second for the pitcher, Carson Thurs. Here's the pitch. Breaking ball and a good one from Ben Mettler, and that's strike one. Well, the Warriors were trying to get those two runners both in scoring position, get the tying run into scoring position, but could not get the sacrifice down. Here's the pitch. Swing and a miss, another breaking ball, and it's nothing and two. Well, Mettler's come out and thrown strikes. He played shortstop in the first game, has not played so far in the second until he just came to the mound. 0-2. Just getting a piece of it is Thurs, stays alive. No balls and two strikes. 2-0 Eau Claire North, bottom of the sixth inning. Ryder Schindler off second, Joe Gravine off of first. 0-2. Misses low and away for ball one. Rowan Robbins in the on-deck circle for the Warriors. Right-handed hitter, the freshman waits. Mettler sets below the belt. Kicks, fires. There's a pop-up on the infield. Right-hand side of infield fly will be called, and Cameron Buckman will squeeze for out number two. So now it's up to Rowan Robbins.
Now batting, the catcher, number 8, Rowan Robbins.
Robbins has flown out to left and struck out. He is 0 for 2. Mettler peeks back at the runner at second. Kicks and fires. Oh, that ball was in the artificial dirt and a good play behind the dish. Backhanded by Ritter to save a wild pitch. Probably as importantly as anything in that situation, that wild pitch could have put the tying run in scoring position for the Warriors. But still first and second, one ball, no strikes. Ground ball up the middle, taken at short. Going to the bag himself is Zach Shipman, and that will be a fielder's choice and a third out of the inning. Warriors got the first two base runners on, but nothing after that. No runs on one hit, no errors, and two runners left on base. End of six. Eau Claire North 2, Wausau West 0. Seventh inning coming up. This is Warrior Baseball on 98.9 WXCO. Thanks to the Wausau West Athletic Department for their continued support of our broadcast of Wausau West Warrior Athletics on Bow Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230. Thanks for listening to our broadcast on the radio. But we want to see you out and about cheering on Wausau West student athletes in action. To find out your next opportunity to see the Warriors, go to WisconsinValleyConference.org and click on Wausau West. Top of the seventh inning, Eau Claire North coming to the plate. Game two of a doubleheader. It's Eau Claire North 2, Wausau West 0. Warriors won the first game by a score of 4-0. So again, it has been a game where it's been a day that's been dominated by pitchers. We've only had two run scoring frames for Wausau West. They scored four times in the bottom of the first inning of game number one. And for Eau Claire North, they scored twice in the bottom, in the top half of the third here in game number two. For ECN, It will be the 7, 8, and 9 hitters, McCabe, Tyson, Ritter, to lead things off against Warrior reliever Carson Thurs. Here's the pitch. Misses away on a fastball for ball one. Tyson Ritter is 0 for 2. He's lined out and grounded out. Here's the pitch. Chopper foul third base side. Evens things up at 1 and 1. So trying to bring down the Huskies quickly as Carson Thurs give his offense one more shot in the bottom half of the seventh. Fastball misses outside, and that's ball two. Cameron Buckman waits on deck and land and connect in the hole for ECN. And the pitch, ground ball up the middle. Eiffel Dono makes the diving attempt behind second but could not quite get there. It'll be a leadoff single for McCabe Tyson Ritter. Courtesy runner, Aaron Gust, who is the pitcher in the first game. He'll do the running for the catcher, McCabe Tyson Ritter. So now stepping in, Cameron Buckman for the Huskies. Buckman has singled and flown out. He's hit the ball well twice, both times against the lefty, Keegan Cruzan. But now he'll bunt, and it's a good bunt. Picked up by third, picked up and fired the first in time. Carson Thurs got off the mound very well. That was a good bunt by Buckman. The sacrifice is completed, but that could have easily been a hit, but playing his position well was Carson Thurs. So now a runner in scoring position with one out. And getting his first at-bat in the second game for Eau Claire North is Levante Bean. He played in game number one, had a double in that game. He was 1 for 3. Again, if you miss any of our broadcasts of high school sports, we do put them up on our show page under WXCO Sports and also on Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts. Inside it, hit them. Hit batsman. So runners now on first and second with one out and back to the top of the order. And Caleb Moss. Moss, who is 0 for 3. He was 0 for 3 against Keegan Cruzan. He struck out twice and popped up. Runners off second and first. Carson Thurs kicks and fires. There is a good fastball right in there for strike one called. 2-0. Eau Claire North with the lead, playing the top of the seventh inning. Now stepping off for a quick moment is Thurs. Now he'll look in again to Rowan Robbins for the sign and the target. Now ready as he's taking a little too much time as Thurs, so calling time is Caleb Moss. No balls and one strike. One out. Runner off of second. Runner off of first. Thurs sets just below the chin. Peeks back at the runner at second, kicks, fires. Fastball in there at the knees, inner portion of the plate for strike two called. Nothing and two on Caleb Moss. Left-handed batter waits. Thurs. Kicks and deals. There's a chopper first base side. Played right there by Ty Teske, just one play. He'll go to the bag unassisted. Both runners do advance, but that is the second out of the inning. Zach Shipman, the shortstop, who had a double and scored a run in the third, will now come to the plate. Well, right now, a critical batter for Carson Thurs. Try to keep it 2-0 going to the bottom of the seventh. Left-handed batter waits.
Yeah.
Runner off of third. Thirds is ready. Kicks and deals. Ground ball foul off the facade of the third base dugout. Count runs full, 3-2. Jack Gorman would hit next for Eau Claire North. Carson Thirds is ready. Here comes the payoff pitch. Line drive off the middle. Thirds coming in, trying to pick it up. Flip the first, not in time, and a run scores. That was a ripped liner. Somehow getting a piece of it was Thirds, deflected it. Miles Halbert came in hard, tried to fire to first in time, but never a chance. Infield single for Shipman and an RBI to make it 4-0. That ball was laced, and Carson Thirds was able to somehow fight it off and get a piece of it. But it looks like we're going to get a pitching change here for the Warriors. Coming in from right field, looks like Ethan Sillers will take over on the hill for Wausau West. So we will come back, tell you about the changes here for the Warriors. Two runs in for Eau Claire North in the top of the seventh inning. And the Huskies now lead by a score of 4-0. This is Wausau West Baseball on 98.9 WXCO. And we will have a break here right now on WXCO.
Not too early to start thinking about. Once the season starts, you want to be ready. So, what's your boat? A boat for fishing? Boat for skiing? A pontoon boat for partying? Or are you thinking personal watercraft? Whatever floats fun for you, remember CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union, the leader in financing fun. Great rates, great service, great fun. Local lenders lending local money. Quick and easy loan approval. It's the way financing should be. Stop in and visit with a CCU lender even before you hit the marina. CCU can set you up with a great rate financing approval, so when you find your boat, you're ready to float. The season's just too short not to enjoy every moment you can on the water. Check it out and stop in. Call or apply online at ccuwausau.com. Whatever floats fun for you, remember CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union. We finance fun.
Ethan Sillers now comes on from right field to pitch for the Warriors. Dylan Landreth will go into right field. Jack Gorman will now step in with a runner on first and two outs. Two runs in for Eau Claire North, who have taken a 4-0 lead top of the seventh inning. Fall back to the screen by Gorman for strike one. So two in the third and now two in the seventh for the Huskies to take this 4-0 lead. 0-1 pitch, swing, a foul tip held on to by Rowan Robbins, and it's nothing and two. Sillers towing the rubber for the Warriors, has the sign and the target. Here's the kick and the pitch. Runner on the move, swing and a miss, and that will be strike three and out number three of the seventh inning. But the Huskies do add two runs to their lead. Two runs on two base hits and one runner left on base. Last chance for the Warriors coming up. Bottom of the seventh inning.
The Huskies at the top of the seventh.
Eau Claire North 4, Wausau West nothing. This is Warrior Baseball on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.FM, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app.
For more than 60 years, Sun Printing has been Central Wisconsin's commercial printer of choice due to their commitment to quality, creative solutions, and dedicated service. Sun Printing's team offers you a wide spectrum of services, whether you need vehicle graphics, offset, digital, large format, graphic design, or mailing. They print everything under the sun. No project is too big or too small, so give Sun Printing a call at 845-4911 or visit them online at sunprinting.com.
Bottom of the seventh inning, Ty Teske will lead things off for the Warriors. Warriors need four to tie and five to win. First pitch is a fastball from Ben Mettler for strike one called. One for two in game number two for Ty Teske. He had a couple of hits in the first game as well. Breaking ball drops down low, evens things up at 1-1. Wind kind of picking up here and again blowing straight out right now towards center field. 1-1 pitch. Followed back. Count goes to 1-2. Left-handed batter, right-handed thrower. Here's the pitch. That will bounce in there. And the count evens at 2-2. In the on-deck circle, Cohen Bryant. He will hit for Miles Hobart, it appears. Two-two pitch. Swing and a miss. Bobbled, picked up by the catcher, fired a first in time. Out number one.
Pinch hitting for the Warriors. Number 14, Cohen Bryant.
Cohen Bryant will get his first at bat in game number two. Miles Hobart was 0-1. He had struck out and walked. Ben Mettler fires, hangs a little bit up, taken for ball one. But again, the early season red flag for the Warriors has been the offense. They have not been able to produce on a consistent basis up to this point. There's a fastball in the outside corner for a strike. The hope is as the weather warms up, the bats will warm up as well. Got off to such a good start in this twin bill with that four-run, six-hit outburst in the first. Pitch is a breaking ball. Down low, taken for a ball. But since four runs on six hits in the first inning of game number one, the Warriors have not been able to scratch anything across against the Eau Claire North pitching staff. Two balls and a strike on Cohen Bryant. There's a high fly ball right center field. Going over is the center fielder Pankratz. The ball carrying again with that wind blowing straight out, but there's still plenty of room, and Pankratz will make the grab for out number two.
Boy. The center fielder, number 13, Miles Wahlvogel.
Next up is Miles Wahlvogel for Wausau West. Wahlvogel is 1-2. He's singled back in the third. There's a fastball for Mettler for strike one called. Mettler ready, has the sign and the target. Out of the wind, kicks and deals. Breaking ball drops into the artificial dirt for ball one. One and one on Waldvogel. Right-handed batter, sophomore for the Warriors. Inside, in fact, it ended up behind Miles Waldvogel. And the count goes to 2-1. Ethan Sillers on deck for the Warriors. There's a fly ball right field, but over two strides is Caleb Moss. He'll make the grab, and that will do it for the Warriors in the seventh. Well, we saw a couple of 4-0 games. 4-0 Warriors in game one, 4-0 Eau Claire North in game number two. We'll come back and recap it all coming up next. This is Wausau West Warrior High School Baseball on 98.9 WXCO. Online at WXCO.FM, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media.
Hungry for flavor-packed fun?
Dive into Red Robin's sizzling burgers, mouth-watering fries, and endless options.
Or maybe you're craving the perfect slice.
Then it's Donato's Pizza, your passport to pizza perfection.
Order now and treat yourself to an unforgettable taste experience.
Red Robin and Donato's Pizza, 2255 48 Rib Mountain Drive in Wausau.
Call 715-301-0019 or log on redrobin.com.
Red Robin and Donato's Pizza.
Chad Holmes again from Wausau West High School, where we saw a split of this non-conference doubleheader between a pair of teams that could face off again in the postseason, both teams in Division I, sectional number one. In game number one, it was the Warriors winning by a score of 4-0, but here in game number two, Eau Claire North wins it by a score of 4-0 as well. Eau Claire North got a couple of runs in the third inning with two outs and runners on second and third. Jack Gorman hit a fly ball that appeared to be lost up in the sky by center fielder Miles Waldvogel. Coming over, trying to make the grab from right field, was Ethan Sillers, unable to do so. So it dropped in for a double, scoring two runs to give Eau Claire North a 2-0 lead. Then the Huskies would score twice in the seventh. First, McCabe Teasing Ritter would single to lead off, get around the third base, and then score on a wild pitch. And then Zach Shipman, would line one that was knocked down by Wausau West pitcher Carson Thurs, but it was an infield hit that would score the second run of the inning, make it 4-0, and that would be it. 4-0 Eau Claire North with the win in game two. Winning pitcher for ECN was Paxton Bush. Ben Mettler came on and got the save. Tough luck loss for Wausau West and starter Keegan Cruzan. He threw the ball exceptionally well in that game, but unfortunately, That one play that could have perhaps been made turned out to be really the difference in the game. So with this doubleheader split, Wausau West is now 2-5 overall. They will get into Wisconsin Valley Conference play on Tuesday up in Merrill. We will not have coverage of that one because we're with the Wausau West softball team on Tuesday at Stevens Point. But the Warriors return home for games both on Thursday and Friday. Thursday will be the return visit with the Merrill Blue Jays. 4:50 for the pregame and 5 o'clock for the first pitch. And then on Friday, a non-conference matchup as the Warriors will take on the Mosinee Indians here at Wausau West High School. And again, 4:50 for the pregame and 5 o'clock for the first pitch. So hopefully you can join us for Wausau West Softball Tuesday at Stevens Point, 4:20 airtime, and then Wausau West Baseball Thursday and Friday at 4:50 airtime right here on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. But here today in this twin bill, in the opener, it was Wausau West 4, Eau Claire North nothing, and in the nightcap, it's Eau Claire North 4 and Wausau West nothing. Thanks to our sponsors, without whose help we could not bring you Wausau West Warrior High School Baseball here on 98.9 WXCO, and thanks to you for joining us. I'm Chad Holmes. This has been Wausau West Warrior Baseball on 98.9 WXCO.
This has been Wausau West Warrior High School Sports on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Wausau West Sports has been brought to you by the Cloverbelt Credit Union, Red Robin Restaurants, Sun Printing, the Wausau West Athletic Department, and Coast to Coast Marketing. Thanks for joining us for Wausau West Warrior High School Sports on your home for the Warriors, 98.9 WXCO.
The president has fired a Senate-confirmed member of the National Labor Relations Board, who the Senate approved for a 5-year term, and the president fired her without cause back in February and said, "I did it because I think I can." He stripped them of their role, their constitutional role in the nominations process. And I will say, we've seen amicus briefs, we've seen some statements. I don't know that I've seen anything in terms of the shutdown of the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service, which was established by Congress. So it would be great to see more action and comments coming out of Congress on the loss of their power.
And look, my red hat friends, the people who voted for all of this, you can't want the end of labor law in this country. You can't want to have an attorney general with a stroke of a pen undo any progress in your ability to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions. So contact your red hat senators and congressmen and maybe say, grow a spine, do something, because we desperately need this. Now, as I've been saying throughout all of this, the last line of defense for democracy, I believe, in our country is not our elected leaders. It's not our courts, because this administration not going to listen. It is the labor movement. It is the labor leaders. It is the power of organized workers. It's the people taking to the streets. And I see here recently the AFL-CIO and a number of unions have come together and finally built a legal network to try and fight back to some of this. Can you talk a little bit about what this looks like and what the hope is out of it?
Sure. It's really exciting. The AFL-CIO, a number of unions, Democracy Partners, the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights have come together to put together a legal network that will provide free legal services to federal workers who are either need advice or have been fired or have been laid off, whether they're union or non-union. This is the labor movement and allies coming together to assist workers who need advice on exercising their rights at work. Which is the first time something like this has been put together. It's a really needed, important initiative. And it comes along with, you've, I'm sure, seen that the labor movement has filed more than a dozen, probably more than two dozen lawsuits against the Trump administration to try to stop some of the illegal actions that he's taking against federal workers, again, about shutting down the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service. There was a lawsuit filed on that a couple days ago. So the unions have been busy trying to save workers' rights and, frankly, save democracy from this administration. And this latest legal network initiative is the latest piece in that.
No, it's important. Look, earlier in the week, we had Jimmy Williams Jr. on, the Painters president. And he was saying, look, we've got to file these lawsuits And we've got to get court decisions if we're going to have any direct action. Because I've got a lot of people saying, hey, how come labor's not having a general strike? How come we're not shutting things down? And I said, look, I think you have to have the justification before you have the action. And I think going to court is the right thing, getting those decisions. And when they refuse to honor those decisions, then I think there's action. But not until then. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Not being an elected labor leader, I'm the last person who's going to talk about whether or not there should be a general strike.
Oh, come on. But as an activist.
Let's take it a step at a time. Let's see how we do. Let's see how we do in the courts. Let's see how we do with some of these mobilizations and protests that have been happening all over the country. And hope that some of this gets through and stops some of what's been happening to working people.
Yeah. No, I've been saying, look.
I know maybe this sounds Pollyannish, but it really does seem to me, as somebody who's, you know, spent her career in the collective bargaining labor management space, it really does seem to me like we are at a point where responsible employers ought to be speaking up and saying, you know what, this is not good for labor management relations. This is not good for business. This is not good for our economy to be melting down the system like we're seeing.
No, I don't disagree with you. I don't know that we have those profiles encouraged, but we'll see. Lastly, how many of these wonderfully named, euphemistically named front groups are out there? I mean, because I vaguely remember this from the past. It's not tip of my tongue. I think about, you know, the union facts people and the fairness people. I think of all of those, but it's all of these nice flowers. The Coalition for a Democratic Workplace. Lynn, who could be against that?
Me, for one. Right?
when
it says described by this organization. So you make a really good point. You got to look behind the name and find out what's really going on. And this is a group that's been advocating against workers' rights and against unions since its formation 20, 30 years ago to fight legislation that would have strengthened workers' rights. So don't be fooled by the nice, fuzzy name. What they're advocating here is really dangerous and really radical. Yeah. And hopefully it just ends up on a shelf someplace and we don't have to have another program where we talk about Pam Bondi granting their requests. That would be scary, scary stuff indeed.
I'd love to have another program where we don't talk about Pam Bondi at all. But we'll, okay. we'll take yours first. But Lynn, I appreciate you sharing some thoughts with us. I hope you come back and talk to us again real soon.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
Good stuff. Lynn Reinhart, senior fellow there at the Economic Policy Institute. You can check out their work, epi.org. Fabulous stuff. You want to check that out, epi.org. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Do you love the name? Center for Dogs and Puppies. We love apple pie. While all hating workers. Want to hear your thoughts? rick@thericksmithshow.com. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1857. That was the day that Clarence Darrow was born in Kinsman, Ohio. Darrow was perhaps the original U.S. labor lawyer. Known to be a friend to underdogs, Darrow once supposedly said, quote, "Lost causes are the only ones worth fighting for." Clarence learned his concern for his fellow man from his family. His childhood home was a stop on the Underground Railroad. In 1887, Clarence moved to Chicago to pursue his law career. But his first big client was not an underdog. In fact, he ended up working as the general counsel for the Chicago and Northwestern Railroad. But then the 1894 strike by Pullman workers led him to quit his job. And instead, he defended Eugene V. Debs, the president of the American Railway Union. Debs had been imprisoned for his support of the striking Pullman workers. The case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Although Darrow lost, his reputation as a lawyer for labor was sealed. Over the years, he would go on to successfully defend Big Bill Haywood, leader of the Industrial Workers of the World, when he was accused of murder. Darrow's most well-known case, however, was the Scopes trial. Darrow defended a high school teacher, John Scopes, who had the audacity to teach evolution to high school students in Tennessee, something that was quite controversial at the time. The trial became a major news event. 200 reporters from across the nation covered the case. Darrow won, which was seen as a major shift towards the teaching of science in the classroom. Clarence Darrow is still beloved in Chicago, which holds a ceremony each year remembering his work as a champion of the people.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I know I can hear my red hats now. The NLRB's a bureaucracy. They're the bureaucrats. The bureaucrats.
Yeah, that's the argument. That's the only argument without ever understanding what the NLRB is. It's just, they're all bad. It's all bureaucrats. Now understand, the National Labor Relations Act was established in 1935. It served what I argue is a crucial piece of legislation that acted really as a peace treaty between labor and management. It fundamentally reshaped the landscape for industrial relations. You know, prior to it being passed into law, the relationship between workers and bosses and owners and employers was master and servant, dictatorial. You work for me. You do what I say. And workers kind of pushed back. There were a lot of strikes. There was a lot of conflict. There was stuff that went on. In fact, my grandparents' generation, I know because they told me, my grandparents' generation, otherwise known as the people who went overseas during World War II to fight fascism and blew a lot of things up, they came home and were blowing a lot of things up, fighting fascism in the workplace. And I know that because my grandfather was very clear, don't do these things. We did it so you don't have to. Sadly, if he were still with us, you got to wonder. Because that generation, they weren't taking it. They weren't taking the poverty wages. They weren't taking the horrible, deplorable working conditions. They weren't taking any of that. This was a generation who fought a world war. And they said, you know what, we're going to share in some of the prosperity. Happy days are here again. And what the NLRA did is it established a legal framework so that workers' rights were recognized. The ability to organize, to collectively bargain. In fact, collective bargaining in the law is encouraged. And the government's role is to push in that direction. Because what they want, what the government wanted at the time, what the NLRA was all about was solving problems locally in the workplace. So you didn't have a government agency jumping in and solving this stuff. It was to sit down as somewhat equals and hammer out an agreement. Which is why I'm not thrilled with the idea of an imposition of a contract. I think if a strike is necessary, that's what you have to do. But both parties should hammer it out. And that's what the New Deal era policy did. It said, look, go to the bargaining table, work it out. And it gave, for the first time, workers actual legal footing as having rights. That's a big, big freaking deal. And I would argue one of the things that this generation, people who benefited from my grandparents, you know, basically fighting and dying in the streets for a minimum wage and maximum hour laws and getting children out of mines. We've taken it for granted and forgot or never even knew, because we do such a poor job of teaching labor history, never knew what it was like during the era before the NLRA. Now understand, 1935, long time ago. And we're still operating under those laws. Every amendment to it has been taking rights away from workers. Now, in this, they established the National Labor Relations Board, which is what Lynn Reinhart and I were talking about a moment ago. They're an impartial arbiter to help with disputes between employers and employees. When an employer illegally fires someone, it's the NLRB who hears that case. Employers don't like that because the role of the NLRA is to encourage collective bargaining and to give workers some rights. Employers don't like that because they like the old way. They like the fiefdom. They like being the king of the castle. They like the master-servant relationship. And as I was explaining to my son the other day, in the old days, and what the NLRA understood is that the employer, well, They control everything. They control what hours you work, what you do during those hours, how you do it, where you do it, what you're paid, all of that stuff. Now, I hear people, well, you could quit. If all the employers are collectively doing the same thing through their front groups, and look, they've always had front groups. Americans for Dogs and Puppies who love workers, you know, name it whatever you want. It's all the same aim. It's the pendulum swing of power towards employers away from workers. And there's nothing more that employers hate than empowered workers and also politicians who want to be dictators, which is why you're seeing the Trump administration going after this little known organization that probably 80%, 90% of the workforce could not tell you what NLRB stands for. But for workers, it's a big freaking deal. So to see someone like this Democratic place, workshop, whatever, this front group going, we just want the Attorney General just with the whip of a pen to completely do away with all of the Biden-era stuff. You should be concerned. And employers, and I think Lynn is right. I think Lynn is absolutely right. Employers should be weirded out, because the one thing the NLRA did is it brought stability. Yeah, we've had strikes, but not like we used to. Not like the strikes my grandfather told me about. Not like that at all. And what the NLRA has done is it's given stable labor relations in this country through good oversight, through arbitration, through government action when needed. The NLRB provides clear guidelines. We know the rules of the game, or at least we used to until, well, you got to wonder now. Offered some bit of conflict resolution so that you don't have to strike. Because look, nobody wants a strike. Employers don't want it. Workers don't want it. They don't get paid. But there's sometimes, well, that's the only option, isn't it? If an employer's dug in, we're not budging. The only power workers really have is the power to fold their arms and march their feet. And this is where the right to strike is so vitally important, and the right to not allow employers to permanently replace striking workers. At the end of all this, it was a system that worked fairly well for 90 years. It had pendulum swings, but what they're about ready to do is not just destroy the bureaucrats, they're going to destroy the pendulum, and it will become a bludgeon for employers. Until politically it changes. And then it could go somewhere else. It could be a bludgeon for labor. And as someone who believes that at the bargaining table is where you want to be, hammering out the best agreements for both sides. You know, I've often heard it said, if both parties walk away angry, it was probably a good deal. But they're trying to completely undo. And as I've said before, this is part of wanting to undo and overturn all of the progress of the 20th century and return us to the Gilded Age, where the Musks of the world, who oddly enough, you know, benefit from these decisions, but where the Musks of the world, the Bezos of the world, they rule the roost. And, well, you could accept the conditions or you could starve. And it looks more and more likely starve is where they want to take us. I'll tell you, this is bad. My red hat friends, you should be contacting your congresspeople. You should be going, hey, what you doing? This is your world. This is your work here. Why are you letting them, well, pencil whip it out of existence? Because this affects you too. This doesn't care about red hat or blue hat. This is about green. And it's money out of your pocket to theirs. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Share it with me. If you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at Rick@thericksmithshow.com.
Until next time, this has been the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio,
WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Allison Keyes. A temporary reprieve granted to Venezuelan migrants facing deportation by the Trump administration under an 18th century wartime law.
The unsigned order came in the early morning hours on Saturday with dissents from Justice Clarence Thomas and Justice Samuel Alito. In a statement to CBS News from the ACLU's attorney Lee Gallant, he said, "These men were in imminent danger of spending their lives in a horrific foreign prison without ever having had a chance to go to court. We are relieved that the Supreme Court has not permitted the administration to whisk them away the way others were just last month." Katrina Kaufman, CBS News.